Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Paulette Young, and we'll be joined by also our other host is Selena Lindsay. And our hot topic today is suicide and the COVID-19. As some of you may already know that the month of September is Suicide Prevention Month, so we thought it'd be appropriate to mention some of the information that's out there to help people. And so the questions I've asked is, have the COVID-19 pandemic had any impact on suicide? How does COVID-19 virus pandemic affect one's physical, emotional, social, and spiritual life? How have people learned to cope with the pandemic? So join us tonight, American Health Crisis, Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paulette Young, speaking now. If you actually want to talk on the show, just call in on 858-769-4936 and press 1. We'll be on for about an hour. There are different organizations that help in this area as far as, you know, when people are having or that are struggling. You may know people in your circles that are struggling and they don't know what to do. And the best thing to do is, well, they said call 911. You can also do that because that'll help. Mental illnesses can lead to suicide. So, and we want to talk a little bit on that. Some of you, since the pandemic has started, some people are fearful about coming down with the COVID-19, or they have anxiety, frustration, or they're lonely because we're all isolated. Some have losses because you've lost loved ones, jobs. You've lost a whole slew of things. Just being on lockdown alone can cause problems. Some are very sad, depression. Some have relatives that you can't see anymore. And some have died without you being able to say goodbye. So it's not normal to stay with these feelings and to do nothing about it. Or feeling hopeless or having thoughts of giving up or suicide. These are not normal things to keep with you. So it is important to get help or find help or talk to someone. You do have an organization, one of the biggest one that started in 1979. It's a national organization. It's called NAMI, N-A-M-I. It's a National Alliance on Mental Illness. So you can call 911 or your local emergency numbers immediately. You can also call the suicide hotline, National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. And any time of the day, you can press 1 also to reach what they call the Veterans Crisis Line or their Lifetime Chat. Those are some of the things you can do if you feel yourself you need help. I want to just talk a little bit about NAMI, N-A-M-I, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization. It's dedicated to building better lives for the millions of Americans affected by mental illness. This organization started as a small group of families gathered around a kitchen table in 1979 and has blossomed into the nation's leading voice on mental illness. Today they have 600 local affiliates throughout the United States who work in their communities to raise awareness and provide support and education that has not previously been available for those with needs in that area. So there's a lot of things out there, a lot of people. Being on lockdown is not normal. Being up under a pandemic is not normal. And sometimes people don't know where to go get help or that, you know, this pandemic is affecting them. So some of the things I've already said, if that's you, you may need to get help, call a loved one or call the suicide hotline if you're feeling any tendency or, you know, or overwhelmed, especially with this COVID-19. Some have problems. You can't touch your loved ones. Once they have that diagnosis or they go into the hospital for any reason, everything has changed. You can't be in the hospital with someone that's sick anymore. Only that sick person can be there. So those are some of the issues. What do you want to say about that, Selena?
Well, I think that a lot of this is of course, because that's what we're talking about, is this pandemic, which is creating just a tsunami of problems, especially because when you have, you know, 1.2 million people that aren't working, then you're going to have problems. And you have a lot of different stuff going on, you know, such as you have, you know, husband and wife, because that's the main reason you have a fight, it's financial. You know, you start having these different types of problems. But as you said, a lot of these hotline numbers, people need to be aware that these numbers are available to you 24/7. You can just call those numbers, you know, national hotline. If you can't even think of the names that we're talking about, all you got to do, even to an operator, is tell her to give you a national hotline. And they will give you one of those national hotlines so that you can call somebody. They have professional people on duty that are willing and able to talk to you to help you understand, first of all, that what you're about to do is you're trying to permanently end a temporary problem. And believe me, it's just a temporary problem. You don't have to do what you think that's going to end it. And we understand that what may be silliness to us is a real problem for others, and that there are things that we can't even begin to understand because we're not professionals, but we just want to bring out this awareness that we know it's out there, and we know it's depression, it's schizophrenia. You know, our normal lines of work is something a little bit different, but I kind of mill around in it because you can't, it's impossible to deal with homelessness, people that have food problems without in some mannerism touching on mental conditions, because a great deal of what we deal with, and it's one of the reasons that the cities have not been able to totally arrest this problem, because it takes a lot more than giving them a biscuit and giving them food. They have to have mental and physical help. And this help, they, you know, people like to talk about, well, just, you know, put them in a room, put them in a house. Well, that's not going to work, because once you are homeless, they're just an array of problems. And we don't want to dwell on that too much, because there are a lot of people, they're living in homes with traumatic problems right now, and more problems are coming. Because of kind of what's going on out there. People that have businesses, the only way that they know how to take care of themselves and take care of their family, you know, in the twinkling of an eye, it has disappeared. It's gone. And it's a difficult situation to be able to figure out how to deal with that. And we're going to repeat these numbers over and over again. You know, you dial 1-800-273-TALK, or the talk part is 8255. Again, there are national numbers. Another national number is 1-888-629-9454. That's a national line. And again, I say to you, there are professionals, and they're willing and able to be able to talk to you, to help you with these kinds of problems. And just as we are physically sick, sometimes our mind becomes sick. It becomes impaired with conditions that we ourselves, we can't fix it. You may need help. There's nothing wrong with getting help. It's something wrong if you don't get help. It's something wrong because people like me and Paulette, it becomes difficult when we say there's help out there. We don't understand. Why would you avoid help? There's a lot of help out there. You are not the only one that's suffering with these kinds of problems. Some of you think, well, all I need is somebody needs to give me $10,000. Well, you know, I'm not saying that's not out there, but that still is just temporary. That's a temporary fix for a problem that needs to be addressed in other kinds of ways. And even if you're thinking that way, that's a little bit overboard. So you need some help, and there's lots of it. Think about your friends, your mothers, your fathers, your family, your church, and all of these different types of places that offer help. Sometimes some of that is some of the reason I understand that you don't reach out for help, because you don't want these people to know that you're having a problem. And that's not the proper thing to do. Get it out. Get that thing out front so that you can deal with it, so that others that are professionals can help you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you feel about, or what's happening, like how has this pandemic affected a person's physical health?
Well, I think it takes a tremendous toll, because when you can't sleep at night, and when you don't know where you're going to eat the next day, and when everything that you are, there are a lot of people we don't like to admit, but everything we think about ourselves is intertwined with a job. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like the wizard picked up his wand and said, poof, it's gone. And along with that goes unthinkable things that some of us people, we can't even begin to think. Because along with that goes the house, the car, food, shelter, everything. We're dependent on cell phones. You can't have any of that stuff unless you have money. Where is it supposed to come from? Over and over again, our government has attempted to do small things to keep people with a lifeline. But these are things that this particular epidemic is putting a lot of stress on. Because seriously, you know, I'm an accountant. You know, wonderful. You know, you can go to, for some people, unemployment pays them more than going to work, which was one of the fears of Congress, that they're paying too much, because who wants to go to work when you can just go collect your unemployment? But on the other hand, there are some unfortunate people, what we call mediocre jobs. And in some cases, there is no unemployment for them. And personally, what the government did for them, when the average so-called home mortgage in the areas and in today's marketplace is somewhere between $900 and $1,200 a month. If you're in Los Angeles, we're talking $2,200. And that might just be an apartment. Where does this mentally take these people? It takes them that they feel the pressure that they're up against the wall and that nothing is helping. Thank God the city of Los Angeles came up with several different things that they're doing in order to, for people to be able to pay their rent. But again, there are things that is temporary. And, you know, they came up with moratoriums to hold back the landlord. And at some point, it's kind of like an old cartoon. It has a guy that's hanging off of the mountain, and he's holding on to a guy. And the guy that's hanging on He's asking him, who's holding on to you? Well, this is the same thing that's happening to people that have mortgages that own apartment buildings. Well, the government came out and saved those that live in them, but who's going to save the person that owns the apartment? You know, part of the way he pays his mortgage is through these subsidies and collecting his rent. When that doesn't happen, that puts him in grave jeopardy also. So what we're seeing is basically we're seeing, I don't care if you're the mouse in the church or if you're the Pope and you own the church, all suffering in some mannerism from this great pandemic that's happening right around us. And we're also seeing it happen in every facet. It's happening in the medical world, because they're having to make grave choices, and these choices are not necessarily things that come from what we call the Hippocratic Oath. You know, these choices are turning into financial problems, you know, because when you necessarily you have Obamacare and you have those that basically have no care, but they have a situation that if they don't get help, they're going to mess all the rest of us up. And so what do they do? You know, you can't turn these people away. They brought in on an ambulance. And, you know, even the law says you must stabilize them. And so this puts a great burden on hospitals inside of cities. Even some things, they don't know when a person gets well. They don't know if you have COVID-19 and you recover, that you can't get it again. So the same types of questions or things that I'm putting out there means that this depression, this mental illness, we don't have the answers. The probability is we're going through what I call waves. Every 14 days, one of the waves is that those that were not exposed and were exposed to large groups of people, 14 days goes by and we have another wave. They finally came up with masks and understanding a little bit of how this thing works. And today is Labor Day. And my expectation is you're going to count 14 days or the next 7 days from now, and we're going to have another wave. And so every time this happens, we also have this wave of depression, schizophrenia, all these various different mental problems that are very relative to what's going on out there. Because people, we're not talking about animals. We're talking about people. And also we have fires. In the state of California, basically, the fire department is dealing with between some 87 and 97 fires. And this has also created something that's not good with this pandemic. Every time it becomes extremely hot, I'm one of the people that, you know, I kind of make a little fun out of it and say, when it gets hot, people get crazy. And believe me, it has been hot. When you're suffering from the weather in some places.
Go ahead. Study him. A volunteer. Yes, go ahead. Hello?
Okay, you have me pull it.
No, someone was talking.
Yes, I could
hear
them, but...
Did you want to talk?
No.
Oh, okay, you don't have to listen. Anyway, that was Selena. Selena Lindsay, she's one of the hosts also. But I wanted to say about also about the physical side of this lockdown pandemic. People used to go to the gym, and now you're not in the gym. And unless you find another way to continue to stay physically fit, there are those that can increase stress alone, because it's been proven over and over again through physical exercise that it can help relieve your stress and anxiety. You feel better because that's how you get your endorphins, your feel-good hormones released. you're inside and you're not getting outside at all, unless you got all the equipment in your house or you can run around your house, you have to continue with the physical. And they're finding that there are a lot of people that haven't. We do have the advantage of, for those that know how to get on YouTube and or use your phone, you can look up various exercise programs, because staying physically active is very important through this pandemic. And for those that aren't staying physically active, they're ending up with other problems. You've got people with diabetes, type 2, and doctors will highly recommend that they include exercise as far as staying physically fit and keeping their blood sugars down. That's just a few of the things that is necessary, because physically being on lockdown and in your house and not moving or thinking to move is not a good thing. They'll even say even doing stretches will help, but to do nothing and staying physically glued to a TV and then watching the news and numbers going up or barely going down is not a healthy thing either, when we talk about our brains and emotionally. Emotionally, things can be upsetting as you see those numbers going up. Some people panic. Some have become like hermits. The lockdown wasn't meant to do that. It was meant to come from each other. But there are things you must do, even for your emotions. You want to name some of those, Selena? From an emotional standpoint?
Well, a big area has been mothers and children. Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter was recently here visiting, and half of it's all she talked about was how mentally challenged she is with her own children, because, you know, it's one of the first times she's had to literally be their teacher, their caretaker, and, you know, to a marked degree, they really just didn't know what these teachers were doing with their kids, and now they have them. And, you know, it creates quite a bit of pressure. And then also, too, because almost all of the schools have gone to electronic means of our learning systems. And this also creates a number of different problems because, you know, we sometimes think we're kind of computer savvy. And then it's sort of like watching a television program and it says you're not smarter than a fifth grader. And you find out really quick that, you know, it's a real supreme challenge to deal with your children. And if you think you're pent up from not being able to go anywhere or go do anything, these children are really confined. And even my own grandkids, you know, they call me and tell me, Granny, why are we in jail? And have to answer, yeah, why are we in jail? They like, that's, you know, why are we locked up? And I go, well, it's to keep you well, you know, because and it's
shocking. What is their age for them to have those? What age?
One is 8 years old and the other is 11.
Wow.
And they want to know why are they in jail? What did they do wrong? I'm like, oh honey, you didn't do anything wrong. It's that there's a disease out there, and we want to keep you well. And the best way to keep you well is to keep you in the house, and you have to wash your hands and things a little bit more so that you stay well. But it's also very challenging for children. And even more so for those that already have mental problems. I have a grandson that is autistic. And he's one of those kids that, first of all, he doesn't like loud noises. Anytime something gets above a certain decimal level, you know, he's holding his head, holding his ears, and if, you know, something goes wrong, if he drops something on the floor and you try to approach him, he starts backing away from you. And it can sometimes be, you know, dangerous if you're outside because he won't come to you. He's going away from you. And he's difficult to control. And on top of that, he's a very large child because he's almost 5 feet tall, and he's only in the fifth grade. You know,
wow.
He's a big kid. And so children are having extreme difficulties with what we as adults are going through. In addition to that, some children are stressed out even more because we have to consider where they normally get meals from, in which you and I are in the business, is generally, you know, they eat at school. So when eating at school stopped, that created another real big problem. So here in America has always been there, but it has never been up front and had to be dealt with like now, that these children are not getting a meal. And it's pretty difficult for a parent, which is another reason why they're depressed and having difficulty, because now you got to look at it. There's no place to send your children when there's nothing in the refrigerator. So
yeah,
I think
then,
all of them. Go ahead.
And then I was going to say, you know, especially on the emotional side, I know I have a nephew, and him and his wife, they're working from the home because their jobs are allowing them to do that. But they have two small kids, a 6-year-old and 4-year-old. And I said, how are you handling that? And he says, it's not easy. They had to set up shop in their dining area. And then there's a way that they can close off with doors. And he said they just watching them and doing all the things you're supposed to do, he says, almost literally impossible. They're in another world that normally you would not put kids in within your own home, but what else can you do? It's not, we are still on pandemic. Now, his kids are back in school on a part-time basis, but he said, oh, that's at least some kind of relief. Because, you know, it's back and forth what you have to do with them and do your job, you're working. So it can be very hard. It's not like everyone's going to hire in babysitters or have that type of income. Or you have family because everyone's, you know, trying to do the best they can. So and that can be a problem. How are your grandkids handling the social part?
Well, they're constantly having all kinds of issues because, you know, there's no place to go. Their mom did take them to, thank God, San Diego Zoo with the animals opened up and you stay in your car, you know, but so the safari or whatever it is. And
yeah.
So there's a very difficult time trying to find a venue that's safe, you know, something for them to do. Same thing is happening in terms of them giving them education because they're trying to even utilize the outdoors of their house just to give them a change in the venue, you know, where they put a table out there and let them do their homework and stuff outside to help them with, you know, some of the issues of feeling all pent up.
I know. I've talked to you in the age group, like 12 and 13-year-olds. On the social side, they're tired of FaceTime. They're tired of telephone. They said, we want people. We want, you know, a human being to see. Not through your phones and not through your computers, and that there's some difficulty there. They understand why we're doing this, but that doesn't take away how they feel. They really miss the in-person person part. Even if they can social distance in person, they would rather that than to look at everything through a computer or a device. Not the same. So, and then I asked the question about what about spiritual life? And everyone's not, all churches haven't opened back up. Some kids at one time did go to church. Sunday school was good for them. Or just going to the church, and especially a large church, has had the children's ministry and things like that. Because of the pandemic, I understand that part. It had to come to a halt. And I did some research, not all the churches, but what I found is some of your large churches, even though they had live stream for the adults or Zoom for the adults, they didn't have things, at least here in California, some of the places I called, they didn't have things for children. I called some in Texas. They didn't have things for children, but everything was for the kids. It's almost like the children part, spiritual, came to a halt in a lot of places. It's rare to find one of the spiritual places or the churches open up and doing things for the kids. When it came to a halt, that part came to a stop also. I don't know if just didn't have adults to participate, the same adults that were there in person. I'm not, you know, maybe they felt, I don't know what they felt, but I just noticed that for some reason when it came to kids and the churches, a lot of it got stopped. Not for the adults, but for the kids it did. There's
numerous things that happen because even where they have a, you know, for instance, YMCA and swimming and things like that, I have my grandkids that have issues with that because they still don't really get to, you know, play with their friends and, you know, keeping them separated is a monster job, you know, which their mom just feels, look, I don't think I'm going to let these guys go there anymore because, you know, they want to go and congregate with other people.
Mm-hmm. But I'm surprised that the churches didn't, when they did Zoom and live stream, you had all these things for the adults that the kids weren't considered. The kids keep their side going, too. For me, as a grandma, parent, I was just surprised that you wouldn't want that spiritual part to continue on also because a lot of the kids have some, not everyone has computer or they have access to a friend computer. So I don't know if there was technical issues as far as that's concerned. But most of the time, even in those situations, a parent can monitor it. But I don't know. I'm still not clear on the why part. If anybody listening, you want to chime in, you can. If you're on the number 8, hello?
Yes. Hi, Paulette. It's me, Sylvia. How's everybody tonight?
Doing good.
Good. Yeah, so I was going to say one of the things with that is that with children, as I could hear everyone talking here about, you know, they're in different stages of development, and with that stages of development, the parents may not be trained, even though they may be physically able to understand how the whole computer, the Zoom, and all that works. What may happen is that social emotional learning for the parents and how that is something that's important for the kids, they're not equipped to know how a child will respond in their emotional or social setting. So when that element comes into play, they may get stuck, and then it might just cause more stress for the parents, more stress for the kids, and then now you're adding the extra element of them socializing with other kids, and then that might deter them or inhibit them from continuing to want to do it if they have some type of a mishap. I don't know if that that makes sense. But yeah, I think a lot of things that they're trying to do now is they're getting on the bandwagon as far as that social emotional learning, because the kids are not just physical beings, they're not just intellectual beings, but they also have a social and emotional side, and that stuff we really can't. It's not something that's easily learned, or not all parents have a lot of knowledge about. So that when their kids respond to something like that, it's kind of like, oh, now what am I going to do if they start crying, or this person makes them feel bad, or I don't know if that, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm glad you spoke up, because all this time I'm thinking, what's wrong with the church? Did they forget about
the kids? Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about the impact of, you know, because you are on a computer, and see, it's not, you're not in the classroom with that adult, and there are other, you know, and it's not like there's going to be a response, or there's no one to help them if they're watching it by themselves.
I hadn't even thought
about it that way, but yeah, that makes very good sense. So I don't have to beat up churches anymore.
and I'm sure it's a big feat. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people want to probably support the kids in doing it, but you would have to have a lot of monitors available as far as, you know, adults or caregivers to kind of watch the reaction that the kids might have, or if they have an emotional response, or if they want to be able to support them. But if we're limited on people to do that, then it's kind of like, why am I going to set myself up for causing more stress or more problems?
Because I have a daughter that's in Texas. How is she handling? Because her kids are, you know, up under their youth ministry. She said they sit there with me. She said we all sit there together. So it's not about having at their level and stuff like that. They just, well, the old time religion, where the kids were, they were all together.
Like you guys had mentioned, there might be some kids that don't have somebody that actually will sit there with them, because it's kind of like, okay, here's the computer, listen to the service or listen to the activity, but there's maybe not somebody there that can help them navigate through the response, and they might just make it worse. So
I never thought
it's a big
about
genre.
That. Well, at least I guess the churches I know, the ones I've contacted here in California and Texas, they're like in one accord. They can sit together and listen to the message.
Yeah.
Have a separate lesson, or, you know, where the kids are listening to the message separate from the parents. So, yeah, that does make sense. But that shows, you know, and if they're not listening at all, which there's quite a few not, then that spiritual side, how they were fed before, unless the parents are doing something about it, you know, at home. I don't know. I guess with all this still being new, it's not like it's been around for year after year after year, and learning the various coping skills is important. Because without some type of skill set, our kids are, you know, end up at a total loss, and that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
And I had mentioned some of the, I'm going to mention it again, you can call 911 or your local emergency number immediately if your, you know, anxiety is too high or you're thinking about suicide. You can also call what's called the suicide hotline. National Prevention one is 800-273-8255. That's some of the places, and I mentioned earlier about I always say it wrong.
NAMI.
That's a grassroots started in, as I mentioned earlier, in 1979. They actually, I was reading up all the history on them. they started at their table on a group of parents together, and that's 1979, ain't too long ago. They sat at a kitchen table, and they came together, and that's how they began to form. And then since then, they have something like 600. They're aligned with 600 other people that are part of NAMNI, which is a national organization that stands for National Alliance of Mental Illness. Very great group of people. If you don't remember the numbers I gave out, you can call for information, and you'll be able to get that. But it's National Alliance on Mental Illness. Great group. What they do is, say the person needs help, or you want to get the person help, or you're a family member and you recognize something's wrong, they will help you help that family member. And they will give you tools. They'll educate you tools, what to look for, because most of the time people don't even know what to. They lose a loved one. Why did they lose them? Most of the time, nobody recognizes that the person is suicidal or that they're getting ready to commit suicide. Most of the time, they know way ahead of time what they're all about.
Right, a lot of times.
And, no, but if you don't know what to look for, you'll ignore it, and then it's too late. Robert Williams would have shown signs, but people trained to know what to look for, so they didn't see the telltale signs. Somebody losing hope and they've given up on life is a bad sign. Just remember that. That is not a good sign. That, you know, they're very depressed. They kind of lost their job. And most of the time they're talking about it. Somebody even write about it. But no one's paying attention.
Yeah.
Think they're capable of doing this. And anyone's capable of doing anything. It's just you have to, recognize it, the signs and symptoms. And anyone listening, because this broadcast goes all over the world, if you're listening right now and you don't know the signs and symptoms, call the hotline. Call NAMNI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. They can send literature your way. They can give you what those signs and symptoms are so that when you see a loved one that's like that, don't think that loved one ain't capable of committing suicide. Yes, they are. They would have already told you so. But you didn't recognize that that was a sign or symptom. This month for September is Suicide Prevention Month, and that's why we're talking about it today, because with the COVID-19 and people on lockdown and an increase in anxiety, and not everybody's reaching out for help. Not everybody, wanting help or even know they need help. They may, the loved one may themselves don't even recognize that you're in trouble. And so with that in mind, families got to begin to get the training that's necessary. All this stuff I'm talking about is free. It's given free. There's no charge. NAMNI is a nonprofit organization. There's no charge for someone to tell you what to look for. And don't think it can't happen to your loved one. It can't.
And I know I came on a little. Yeah, I was gonna say I know I came on a little late, but I wondered if I could just share a couple of statistics just for California.
Yeah, go ahead.
So for and sorry, my name is Sylvia Rodriguez, and I'm one of the life coaches. I do that independently, but I also am a clinical therapist as well at one of the local mental health authorities. But just some statistics from Psychology Today and the CDC, and you can find that at cdc.gov. California, as far as COVID-19 and the potential connection to suicide rates, the California unemployment rate hit bottom at 25%, and this is the same as the national unemployment during the Depression. So the suicide rate then went from 12 per 100,000 to 18 per 100,000, and over the last 10-year period, it averaged at 15.4 per 100,000. So it's almost very similar to that time frame, you know, as far as that the unemployment, and then just seeing the connection between these things with COVID, and then as this happens, then we see now that there's currently 1 in 3 people who suicide, who have suicide or were unemployed. And then we just have to consider the impact of, you know, the working age of the men that are not participating in the workforce. Just looking at these numbers. And then also there's been an increase of suicides. Let's see, of 6,000 from 48,000 in 2018. So it's increased by 6,000 as far as the number of national lives that have been lost to suicide. So just those are just some statistics. But yeah, I heard a couple of things about people, the reasons for them, I guess the stressors as far as the economic stress, the social isolation, the barriers to getting the mental health treatment, maybe some health and medical problems. Increase in firearm sales. Obviously, it's allowing people more access to have it completed. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different things, a lot of different factors that are showing that increase with the time of the COVID. So, but yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Sylvia. It's just showing that. And with that in mind, those numbers, it's more crucial that friends and family, they may not be suicidal, but you've got to recognize it in a friend or a loved one. Recognizing means possibly can prevent it. But if you're not even and then you got kids that are teenagers, suicide rate at the age of 14 for boys is greater than girls. Now that we have this pandemic, no one knows where the numbers are going to be or have gone in those age groups. But if it was already there prior to a pandemic, and still what happens even in these teenagers, no one, that child doesn't have to be dead if a family member had recognized.
Because
they do show you that something's wrong, but if you don't know what to look for,
right? And usually, it's not necessarily sometimes things we see, but we can hear things and we can also sense things through their behavior. So if you notice that they're looking for ways, or just they start kind of stockpiling pills or purchasing guns or increasing the substance use or engaging in risky behaviors, acting recklessly, maybe unable to sleep, having like really dramatic mood changes. And some of these things overlap with other things like medical conditions or other mental health conditions, but these are things that you could see. Maybe changes in personal hygiene, maybe drawing like dark types of poetry or art. So those are some things that we can see. And then if we kind of hear them talking about, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, or God will forgive me, I have a solution. Just hearing these types of things, my friends and families would be better off without me. Nobody would miss me. If you start hearing that type of negative talk about themselves, and those are things that we also want to listen for too. Maybe even if they start listening to music with like dark lyrics, you know, about death and dying, that also is something that you want to listen for.
I remember when I homeschooled my oldest daughter for 2 years, and one of the person, well, they weren't a parent that was homeschooling, the child was in regular school, and then she showed us this artwork her son was drawing. They were all drawings of a gun to your head. And we said, hey, you got to did need to become a one-on-one. And he did get the help he needed. And today he's still alive, went to college, everything. But we do believe if she hadn't did something different, the guy, that kid would not be alive today. And yet when she saw that work, she didn't understand it. There were some of the other parents good, and they were. Because I remember at that time we're all planning a field trip, and there was a question whether he should be allowed to go because he may kill himself on the field trip. That was other adults' concern. But that's when, you know, someone felt you got, we as a group, we have to say something to the mother and make sure, you know, help is there. She really didn't understand the drawing. I just mentioned that because when you say they'll draw, yeah, they do. And if you think that drawing is something okay or something from the TV, no, it's not. It's a child that can commit suicide.
Yeah, and that was good that you guys took sort of like a, which is what we're trying to increase now, is just a community approach. And that's what it sounds like you guys did. You normalized it, you know, with her, that it's something normal to talk about, or that even though it's a really dark concept, but it's still it's a normal thing. It happens. Humans do it. But at the same time, you guys came around her, and you made it everyone's business. You didn't just leave her and say, oh, well, she'll figure it out. So that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, because your thoughts is you don't do nothing. God, that kid's too young. And you can see the end result even before it happened. But if there was an intervention, it did make us. We were so proud. I mean, his grades were low in the beginning when he did. He became a homeschooler, homeschool him to bring him up to normal level because the regular school is not designed that way. If that fourth grade level and you're in 11th grade, they're not going to give you fourth grade material. When you homeschool your kids, you can bring them up pretty fast. And then they achieve and they feel good about themselves. All of those are factors. And in his case, that had to be done. Other than that, I don't believe he'd be here today. But he's alive, thriving, and has done quite well because of the intervention. And I like what you said, you know, we did do it as a community because we all became concerned. Everyone did. But anyway, anyone else that want to share, you can, because I only have a few more minutes. You still have to call in that number. I know some are still listening, but the number in order for you to talk is 858-769-4936, and you press 1. We normally come on the first Monday of every month with a different topic, and it's always at the same time, 8 o'clock Pacific time. So if you want to join in, and you can talk at any time, but you have to press 1 in order for us to hear you. And the message does go around all the states in the United States and the different countries throughout the world. So it's not just here that we're dealing with these issues, because the same thing that we have wrong here in the United States, they have on every globe out there, every country, be it Europe, Indonesia, China. We all fight the same thing. They all have suicide. They all have, unfortunately, COVID-19 to deal with. And these are real issues. But they can, if you're given proper tools, you can work through it. You don't have to work through it alone. Anyone want to say anything before I close? Okay. Well, we'll be on the air again. Again, this is American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young speaking, your host. You heard from Selena Lindsay, and it's also valuable information also from Sylvia. Greatly appreciate it, ladies, for your input. be back on the air again on the first Monday of October. At this point, goodbye. Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Good night, ladies.
Good night.
All right.